Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad End Podcast. This is episode 42, which is, we correctly guessed it before the episode, which is pretty exciting because usually we spend about like a couple minutes being like, what episode is it? And then we open up a folder and then we figure it out. But this week, we figured it out right away because, you know what?
I did still open a folder though.
Oh.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Kyle. I didn't see anything, but I opened a folder for sure.
Well, I was about to say, like, because of our Patreon, maybe we're more in tune with our bi-weekly podcast. I am Katie McCarthy, a writer and editor with USGamer.net, and I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts.
I'm Josh Calixto, author, writer. I'm just guessed as writer. Do you have to be
author?
Have a novel to call yourself an author?
I would love to call myself an author, but I don't feel like I've
listeners, let
title.
Us know. Send us an email at badendpod@gmail.com, or if you want to talk to us directly, one of the best ways to do that is by becoming a member of our Discord channel, which you can do if you subscribe to our brand new Patreon. That is patreon.com/badend. You can check us out there, subscribe, donate some cash if you like our show. We just kicked that off last week. We have a great community going on over
there. It's amazing.
It's actually amazing.
It's popping off. Yeah.
I guess
everybody in our Discord. I'm Kyle, by the way. Just getting skipped over, passed over.
Whoa.
Like I've been blown on top of my door.
I was waiting for Kyle to introduce himself.
I was just waiting. Josh was just going to the Patreon blurb. But
this is just
Josh
an extended intro sesh. So.
But seriously, shout out to everybody in our Discord already. You guys are great. I've been excited to go in there and see what people are talking about without us even telling them to say anything. They're just talking about cool shit. So if you like Bad End and you like what we talk about, the Discord is really keeping it going between the episodes. So thank you to everybody that's joined. Thank you to everyone that's already backed. We're almost at $80 a month, which is crazy because that's pretty close to, that's well, not pretty close, but it's a non-trivial percentage of our first goal, which is just to like kind of clean some stuff up, help get Katie a new mic, maybe look into getting an editor. So thank you guys for backing. And if you listen to this podcast consistently, it's pretty cheap. You can back us for $3 and you get to join the Discord and come say hello. So thank you to everyone that's joined.
Yeah. And please reach out if you have any feedback or anything like that. One of the rewards that we're going to be doing is actually an extra like little mini podcast where we play an indie game every month. And then we kind of do an extra podcast. So we'll be doing 3 a month now. That will be available to our subscribers a little bit earlier. And then also you'll be able to talk about that with us in the Discord. So we'll have some discussions about that in the Bad End Discord. So just for a little bit of community type thing, if you do not subscribe to the Patreon, that's also fine. You'll get those episodes as well, just at a slightly later date. The first game that we're actually going to be doing for that is, what did we decide on, y'all?
We'll tell you at the end of the podcast. I don't want to tell you now.
We'll keep it at the end.
Yeah, keep listening.
Like, stay tuned for next time.
Stay tuned for the end of the podcast. I don't want to ruin it now.
Did you just not like figure it out yet, or is that?
No,
is
I got
it.
The tab
we're
is
just
open on
save
my
it
browser.
The end.
Well, we actually do have.
Josh, were you not listening to our pre-conversation?
I didn't pay attention to what you guys said.
I think you were brushing your hair. I don't know.
This is staring off into space.
Trying to get my audio right.
Thinking about Hearthstone?
Apex Legends.
I was thinking
probably.
About.
Oh, what were you thinking about?
Legends.
Apex Legends.
And we've talked about this like the last two episodes, but my life is consumed by this game at this point. It's getting to like League of Legends levels where I was at one point, PUBG levels.
Oh, yeah.
Where I'm just like,
it's PUBG levels for me right now. It's like bad. It's like
I just
want
to play. I've started playing games by myself without when my friends are not online to try to get better at aiming. I've started watching strategy videos. I've started watching streamers. I have started following and subscribing to Dizzy, who's one of the top Apex Legends players. Check him out. He's really good. He got a game with 33 kills in it, which is literally
33. That's like most of the people.
He's literally killing 1/3 of the people in
this
game.
I gotta find that.
There's I've been watching Shroud as per usual. I've been watching Shroud streams. Guy's a nut, a pure nut, an almond. This guy's
Shroud's great,
nutty. Some other people. This guy Fugly or something. He's pretty funny. He's pretty cool. some of the Apex Legends streamers are actually pretty cool. A little bit, you know, streamers can be obnoxious, but these ones I would recommend just for great gameplay and commentary that doesn't make you want to stop playing Apex Legends because you don't want to associate yourself with them in any way.
They're more like streamers and not screamers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's like literally what people call streamers is like shriekers, screamers, whatever. And it's, I feel like they're like kind of stigmatized among, quote, more mature streaming communities, if there is such a thing in esports. But like a lot of League of Legends players don't scream so much. Like there's some that are actually really annoying, sneaky. The League of Legends player who does those like big cosplays that gets big, that kid is a screamer. All right. Little known fact, you might enjoy those cosplays and please do, but the kid screams. And it's annoying. Anyway,
I can't deal with screaming.
Yeah, it's
no,
it's
amazing loud to me about like Apex. Else I get nervous.
The crazy thing about Apex to me is that like it's happening as a thing. Like it's so weird to like Fortnite was such a thing I guess like I mean really in the past like half year or so it just got really big, and now like it's amazing to me that like another game can come out so close to the last thing and be like big, just like just as big, just as quickly. And it's like, I saw some stats about like that. It took Apex less time to get to 50 million players than like Fortnite, which I think took a few months. But I also think like part of that is like, oh, well, Fortnite actually grew the BR audience to have the kind of 50 million player capacity. So when there's essentially no cost to switch between these two free games, like, and someone who's played Fortnite for, you know, 6 months back to back is like looking for a new thing to play, that person has almost no downside to playing Apex for like even, you know, an hour or two out of the like 10 hours they might play Fortnite. But it's just, it's fucking crazy. It's like, it's also like Titanfall was not like a gigantic smashing success. Like Titanfall 2 almost flew under the radar. Like Respawn's been doing a lot of stuff, but the fact that this kind of like really like nuts and bolts like first person shooter team made this like free to play battle royale game that's like blowing up in the same way that like other like I guess it's like it, I don't know, it's so weird. It's just another thing is out and it's also massive, and it's, I still feel like I'm trying to like reckon with Fortnite's success, and you know, Apex Legends happens and it's like, oh, there's another one, and then you know 4 months from now there'll be another one, and then just keeps happening.
This might be like one of the first popular things that Kyle has ever been into.
Yeah.
Damn.
This is shocking.
It's fucking cut right there. And I like it. It feels good. It's like, I just, yeah, it feels good to play.
Yeah, it does.
I do. I do like it.
I feel like, Josh, last episode, you were kind of clowning on the guns a little bit. And
oh,
now
yeah,
you're
Mr.
all in on
no
it.
Feel.
Yeah.
Mr.
Yeah. The like... guns don't feel as good as PUBG. I will continue to say that. But at the same time, it's like, I think that they're good. I think the game is good. The game is just good, you know? And that's like, that's a lot. So I think there's like a lot to be said for just the straight up factor of like playability and that Apex has. And even when like I watch clips of Fortnite and I'm like, this game looks like just ass compared to even just
Fortnite's
Apex.
Like so ugly. And like, I mean, I don't like the art direction behind Apex. It feels very Borderlands-y, but like,
it's also just,
man,
boring.
It doesn't look ugly. Like
I actually disagree, because I want to talk about something really quickly that came up while I was playing Apex this week. And that is like the character design. A lot of like the characters in this game are like, there was a lot of like, you know, gamery types who are like making criticisms of like, this game is, it's so diverse. It's like going in the other direction. Like every character is either like a girl or like brown, and like some people took issue with that stuff. But I was playing it and I was like, some of like these characters are like, you just would not see this shit in other games, like as like cool heroes and stuff like that. And that to me is like a differentiating factor about this game that gives it personality that a lot of these other types of games don't have. I think, for instance, like that probably carried Overwatch for a while. Like I think it continues to carry Overwatch, Oh, but I think this stuff, like, it does matter. Even if, think about how long, like, girls who've been playing video games, or like, think about how long, like, brown people who've been playing video games who are forced to play like white dudes. It's not a big deal. People only started like really complaining about this stuff recently because it's like, yo, it's been like 2 decades. Why can't we get like more brown characters in video games? And people still get pissed off at people bringing that up. But it's like, if we could do that, like, why is it a big deal for like white people or like majority people who are part of the majority to play as like stuff that they don't typically play, right? For me, like, playing as a girl is like, it's fun. Like, playing as like a brown person, playing as like some alien, whatever, it doesn't really matter. It just like adds flavor and character. And I think when you have like a lot of humanoid characters in games like this, like, it is something that you're not really used to. So like, when I do see these types of characters in these games, I'm not like, oh hell yeah, woke win, like, there's brown people in my game. It's not even that. It's just like, oh, this is like slightly more interesting than like, think of like the characters in freaking Titanfall, which is the most generic white dude. It's like Nolan North voice, who's like, God, talking to the robot. Remember that? He's like,
the main character has like a very generic name, like Jack Cooper or something very funny. Yeah. Where it's like, this is like, they just like had some like white man names in a hat and just pulled out. We're like, this one works.
Right.
It's like, this will be our robot hero and it's or like, our robot buddy hero.
Yo, nothing wrong with, you know, being a white dude or anything like that. Like, do your thing. Like, it's whatever, but it's also not a big deal to play as like a girl or a brown person or like you know, if it doesn't matter, which is what people have been saying for the longest time, then why wouldn't you want some variety? You know, go play.
I think
Titanfall.
It's also like fucking like white people are bored of these white people characters. Like, it wasn't like it's not like the audience for video games that was getting mad at like the boringness of like video game protagonists was only like non-white people of color. Like, it was also a lot of white people being like, this is so fucking boring. And it's then like, now it's like happening.
Yeah, like brown haired dudes. Like,
yeah, it's like now it's actually changing. And I think there's a contingent of people that are like mad. But like at the same time, it's like all those like boring like Sam Fisher named white dudes were like not even real characters. They were just like cardboard cutouts of like kind of an action hero that like actually lacked the depth of a real action hero. So it's nice that like I think that you're getting a lot of this sort of like exploration in terms of like what's possible in character representation in a game, and it's a lot more than a white person, surprisingly. So yeah, I mean, it's super cool. It still feels like revolutionary to see like a person of color in a video game, especially a first person shooter, and you're like, whoa, that's like not a white guy. It's not like a gruff voice when that person dies. Like, someone can have a high-pitched voice and it's like okay, you know?
Right. Yeah. And all that is to say that, like, I think that this stuff does enrich the game. I don't think it's the biggest deal in the world, but I think that it's cool. Like, and it's something that I just thought about as I was playing it over the course of the past week, you know? But yeah, something to think about when you're playing some Apex Ledge in the future. Yeah, but we probably shouldn't talk about it too much more just because we have talked about it so much. But I think probably a lot of our listenership is playing the crap out of this game. So let us know what you think, folks. Hit us up in the Discord, tweet us, email us. How do you feel about Apex Legends? Anything else you want us to hear us talk about with regards to this game? Hit us up. Let us know.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to... who's going to do the segue?
Please do.
Me?
Just segue. Okay. It's so seamless now.
Yeah, this is like very not obvious. no, but like, so originally our game of the month was going to be a game called Devotion, which is a Taiwanese horror game from Red Candle Games. They did Detention, which is an excellent also horror game about Taiwan during the White Terror period, which is like this very horrible period for like over a decade. I want to say it was like a dozen years. In Taiwan, where they're under martial law, but then like over 140,000 people were arrested and imprisoned, and thousands of people were executed, and it was just like this very horrible period. But it's like a really great horror game in putting a historical period into a horror context and showing that it was like really horrific. But anyways, this game Devotion came out last week. Was it the week before or last week? I think it was the week before.
Actually, I think it was 2 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, it was like late 2 weeks ago. And basically, this game came out. People are very excited about it. And then over the weekend, after at least this controversy brewed up because someone discovered a, I guess, meme on a wall. It was like placeholder art, apparently. And it was like of this popular meme in, from China of comparing the president of the People's Republic of China, Xi Jinping, into or at comparing him to Winnie the Pooh, which at first in China started as like an endearing thing of like, oh, he looks like Winnie the Pooh. But over time, it kind of like became like a voice of dissent, as memes tend to in China, because sometimes they like ban words like I oppose, like when they banned. Yeah, they literally banned like words like I oppose or I disagree when they decided to eliminate presidential terms. So basically, he could be president forever. So people were like not happy about that, but they couldn't voice their dissent online. So they straight up started doing memes and stuff to like poke fun at the president. Anyway, it's like very controversial. And so it, especially considering the fraught, I guess, historical history with Taiwan and China, and the fact that Taiwan is still, like, not really an independent country. So, Chinese gamers really took it personally, which, I mean, yeah, it's, I'm not gonna pretend to be an expert on this, obviously. Like, my family's Chinese, but I am extremely white. I'm not, like, an expert in China's geopolitics or anything. But it's definitely, like, a tense issue, I guess, and especially because this game was hugely marketed in China, so like a lot of Chinese gamers were very excited for this game, and then they find this piece of artwork that's basically not only making fun of the president, but also there's like other things that people have interpreted to be like slanderous against like mainlanders. So it's just like all this controversy brewed up, and then as a result their publishers dropped them, both publishers, and then it's unclear if they took their game off Steam or if the publisher took their game off Steam, but their game's no longer purchasable. Like after this happened, like 3 days after release, and it was getting major buzz, like on Twitch. It was like one of the top games. I think it was like getting pretty big, like way bigger than Detention was, because it's like a first person horror, which I think is more accessible than the 2D side scrolling thing. But yeah, it's just been like kind of crazy seeing all this unfurl, because like I've been like really excited about this game, and originally we were going to be like, this was gonna be our debut game of the month thing, and then literally a few days after we announced it, it was like, oh, this game's not purchasable anymore. That's not good. But yeah, it's definitely been a weird circumstance, I guess, surrounding this game, like something I did not expect at all. And it's definitely something I don't want to like cast judgment on like the people that have been offended by this and everything, because like I mean it would suck like if you were really looking forward to a game and then you like start playing it and then you're like, oh, this game like might be a little offensive to like my country, even though it does seem a little bit overreaching from like a lot of the like debunking I've read from like Taiwanese gamers and also Chinese gamers. And it's definitely like a lot really unclear, because I don't speak Chinese, I can't read it, so it's like I don't know the symbolism, and I'm not, I guess it's definitely just a very dodgy situation. And yeah, it's unfortunate, because I feel bad for the developers, because like it's strange that this game is the one that all this controversy is happening around, because Detention's like such an outwardly political game, and this game's more socially critical, I'd say, than like political, I guess. So it feels not misplaced, it just feels like it's strange that it didn't happen with their last game, you know? Because I feel like their last game is pretty critical of China and Taiwan's relations. Maybe because it was, like, so in the past, and it's, like, historically based, so it's, like, maybe not as much so. Or people say it's, like, yeah, you know, it's kind of shitty. The White Terror period's not a great time. So maybe it's more, I guess, acceptable. But, like, this seems to have really ignited a lot of ire.
And was the Detention 2D?
Yeah, it was 2D. So Detention was like a 2D side-scrolling horror game. It was like very much adventure gamey, where you like solve puzzles and collected things, like classic adventure games. But it was like a horror game, and what I really loved about it was it had this like kind of like twisted, morbid logic to it, where like solving puzzles was like really hard because you had to like think of things like really grossly. I don't know how to explain it. It was just like very hard to solve puzzles, but also very creative in how it did so. And I thought the story was really compelling and really moving. And the visuals are amazing. Like, the art style in that game is so good.
I mean, maybe it's like a thing, though, is the fact that it's like the there's so much like more of a degree of verisimilitude to like a third person, I mean, a first person, like 3D exploration game versus a 2D game, that like a 2D game can be easy to like write off because it's like, oh, it's clearly a video game. Whereas like a first person thing maybe like reads more like,
I don't think so. I think it just has more to do with probably the how explicit the message was, right? Like,
yeah,
the message in it this wasn't game just was like pretty explicit, where they had to be like, oh, it was placeholder art, it was
it was like, bad, we put this meme in there as a joke,
and then they did a whole like apology on Facebook saying like, we're sorry to anyone who's offended. We are taking this down immediately. We're going to try to figure where we go from here, all this stuff. What I want to talk about is the actual game. There's obviously a lot of this context surrounding it. I am not at liberty to speak on any of this stuff because I know like absolutely nothing about
this. Like, take everything I said with a grain of salt. At the end of the day, it's more like,
what happened. I think it just sucks that you can't play this game anymore because it's... at least right now, because it's really fucking good. And so this game is about, you play the role of a father who is an author, a writer, who writes screenplays, and he marries this very famous woman who's a very famous actress and vocalist, I believe, and they have a daughter together. She's got some issues. She's got like some mysterious sickness when she's a child, that then leads to kind of like antisocial behavior. She's kind of like an outcast at school. But you kind of figure this out over the course of the story, as it kind of unfolds in this sort of like thrillery PT-esque fashion, where you're kind of like walking through your apartment as your life kind of starts falling apart over the years, and you're kind of like reliving all these memories and like kind of piecing them all back together, and sort of dealing with like the ghosts of your past, as it were. And then there's all sorts of like kind of supernatural elements going on, because you as the father start taking drastic measures by like consulting with basically like a spiritual kind of sketchy like medium, like shaman type spiritual guide person who's making you do like really sketchy shit. But what I think is really cool about this game is that it sets up this environment, and a lot of the imagery and the scares, it keeps the tension level very high, but I don't think that it's like, it doesn't feel like it's scares for the sake of like scaring you or whatever. It all feels like it adds to the tension of family drama in a way that I think is typically really like tastefully done. And it's like symbolic, and you're looking at like these things that are appearing in the game world that like kind of symbolize things that stand in for, you know, what's going on in your life and how that's affecting the people around you. There's a lot of like environmental storytelling, but instead of being like writing on the wall, it'll be like, oh, this picture is in a different place, or like this fish no longer is in this tank. And that stuff tells you a lot more about like where this family is going and what's happening. And I think a lot of that stuff is symbolic as much as it is like plot driven. In a lot of cases, the stuff that you're seeing change within your environment is some sort of symbol, right? You have this like this red fish, which apparently symbolizes like, it's a symbol of luck, it's a very expensive fish, and like, you know, in, you know, you have it in one of the eras, and then in another era you don't. So it's like it's symbolizing a lot of things at once, and that context is not really something that you get unless like you're kind of more aware of the cultural surroundings of this game. But it's the type of thing where it's like there's hundreds of those little symbols and little like cues in the game that kind of amount to a larger more engrossing experience that really like pulls you into this family story and where they are, and like you really feel for these characters. And I think that stuff's really cool. I think it does a nice job of mixing like the fact that you're like walking through these real spaces with the fact that it's all just like kind of a dream. What is the reality of this game, would you say, Katie? Is it like a dream? Is it all like this sort of like spiritual, like is he walking through his memories in order to like put together the past? Like where is this game taking place? I think that stuff is kind of unclear, right?
I think it's definitely intentionally unclear. Right. Like I kind of saw it as him walking through his memories and kind of like almost seeing like, where did this go wrong for us? You know, like you start off, like, I think the first scene is like when you're in that living room and it's like, you can hear your wife talking to you in the kitchen and you can like hear your daughter in her room and you're like watching TV or something. And I feel like it's kind of like, here's like the us when we were still a family and like, you know, there's food on the table and everything. And then it like cuts to black or whatever. And then you start like kind of retracing. I think like the next scene is like when the house is all packed up and you kind of like find things and you're like, oh, I'm going to put the bowls on the drying rack. And then suddenly the kitchen like is full of stuff and sounds. And it's definitely like PT-esque, I guess. Like I saw a lot of people comparing it to PT, and I definitely see that because you're like going through the same apartment space and it's the same layout. But every time you go into it, obviously it's different because it's like a different year. It could be like 1980 or 1985, I think, 1986. I feel like there's one more year in there that I'm missing. But yeah, I definitely saw it as like dreamlike, but also I don't think it's like a literal thing. I don't think he's like literally walking through his memories. It's more like him tracing it.
I think that's one thing that was really interesting about this game too, is just the way the story is told. It's a first person video game for the most part. There's some parts where style changes, the actual gameplay changes. But there's this really interesting thing where it's like, it's a first person game, but you almost feel as if the narrative is like being told from a third person perspective. Like there is like an authorial hand that's kind of like guiding you through this story. It kind of reminds me, Kyle, of like, Gravity Bone or something like that. Like,
I've definitely got that sort of vibe.
You know, do you know what I'm talking about though? Where like,
where it's like kind of smash cuts to different scenes a little bit.
You're a first person like perspective, kind of, but the story is dictated by what you're being shown and how it's being shown to you, right? Like you're not actually necessarily living a character's experience, but you're like, you're living through an author's, what an author is showing you of this person's life. You know what I'm saying? Like all that stuff I think is really interesting about this game. And I guess like Paratopic does something similar, right?
I mean, that's like the point I think that you're making is that like it's still like relatively rare in games to like kind of like present more than one perspective on the same events, unless that's like the point of the game. Like the idea of like a subjective perspective is like still something that's like kind of new. So I think Gravity Bone doesn't fully commit, I think, or 30 Flights of Loving is kind of similar, where it's like you kind of see both sides. So you get you like understand that like one is not the like, you know, the objective reality of the situation.
But you're not really experiencing a reality either. You're not, and nothing that you're experiencing in this game is something that would have come to pass, even in the story that's being told. Everything you're experiencing is kind of like, you're not actually experiencing these things as they occur. You're experiencing a sort of like dreamlike reenactment of things that happened during this person's life that are, it's almost as if you're walking through like, it's like a Sleep No More-esque experience where you are interfacing with this story and different elements of it are like kind of lying there for you to interact with. But you are not experiencing like a chronological story. You're being told a story from many different perspectives in a way that feels like you are experiencing it firsthand, but it's sort of like a third person thing. That is all to say, like, you kind of have to play the game to know like kind of exactly what I'm talking about. But I think this stuff is really important when it comes to video games, because we have like a way of we have a way of thinking about like storytelling in video games that I especially first person video games, a lot of which is set up by Half-Life, right? Where it was like Half-Life was a big deal because it was like, this was a big thing with God of War, the remake or the new reboot, where it was like no cuts. Remember, I re-listened to the God of War episode, which by the way, I think is like one of our best. And it's a really pretty good, we talk about some cool stuff in there, but go back and listen to that one if you haven't. But how the whole no cuts thing was a big idea. I think all that shit, all that standard was set by Half-Life 1, which I think was like a big red herring for first-person video games for a long time, because first-person games became obsessed with, and even third-person games became obsessed with this idea of like living out the story in real time instead of going from point A to point B and then it playing a cutscene to advance the story. It was like, you are in this same space where the story is occurring, and watching these events unfold in front of you adds to the experience of like being there as this story progresses, and that makes it more engrossing or whatever. But I think games like Devotion help to kind of break that and show us different ways of telling a story, which I think is really cool. And I think, like, you know, Gravity Bone did a great job of showing how we can tell stories out of chronological order, and we can kind of like cut from scene to scene, and that lends it like a little bit more artistic power to like to hash out its themes in via quote editing in the way that this video game story is told. I think that this video game adds like a layer of abstraction on top of that, where it's like, what am I experiencing here? Like, what is real? What is not? What happened? What didn't? Whose perspective am I looking at this from? All that stuff is like intertwined and meshed together in a way that I don't typically see in video games, and that I thought was like really, really neat. But what's especially amazing about it is that even despite all that, even despite the fact that it is so difficult to tell like what you're looking at or how it fits in, the story it tells is still very much readable. It's very, it's easy to parse. You know what's going on, or at least you have like the general idea and gist of it. You don't have to do like all sorts of research and reading and all this stuff. It all comes across to you as very clear, and all that stuff has like a really incredible human element to it, which is something that you rarely get. Also, the performances in this game have to be some of the best that I've ever seen. Like, the acting in this thing is great.
Yeah, it's really good voice acting. Yeah. It was like, yeah. So I was seeing people compare it to like Gone Home also, and I feel like I don't quite, I mean, I kind of see it, I guess. I think I even referenced it because it was kind of like, well, you're going through domestic space, I don't know. But there's not, yeah, it never is giving you a lot of things to read. I think there's maybe like 30 collectibles or whatever in the game, but it's like more to fill out. It's like doctor's notes and school notes and stuff to like really fill it out. And I feel like at these type of games, you almost expect there to be a lot of like lore items, but it never feels like it's overwhelming you with like context. It's like all very straightforward. And I feel like a lot of the visuals and a lot of the moments that happen in the game are so like abstract. And to have like such like a, like the story is like, yeah, it's like very, it's surprisingly cohesive for how much wild shit happens in the game. Like it's, I don't know, it's really impressive that it comes together, I guess.
It's funny that you bring up Gone Home, because this is a big part of walking simulators, right? Where it's like they have that Half-Life way of like, we need to tell this story that you're experiencing, like Gone Home. The whole setup is that you get back to your house and it's like empty and it's kind of mysterious and almost horror looking. But then the way the story is told is like, you're just reading notes that have been like left behind in this house. And that's the way that they go about like kind of the storytelling in this game, where you're like jumping back and forth in time and from different perspectives and all that stuff. But it's still within this like Half-Life-y framework. And I apologies for continuing to use Half-Life as this, but I feel like it's definitely one of the I feel like it's one of the things that kind of like set up this way of like a video game has to take place like in real time. So the story has to be like front to back, and that's the best way to experience a video game. And I think like a lot of walking simulators operate under that same way of thinking. Like even look at Tacoma, same shit, where it's like you're on a spaceship looking through the ship, but the way that they kind of like work around that, the device that they use to let you jump around in time and experience what happened in the story, is these holograms, recordings. The same thing with Firewatch. The device in that was the walkie-talkie, and you're talking to someone, but you're still experiencing the story front to back. And, you know, they use some interesting little devices, like that little choose-your-own-adventure Twine-esque bit at the beginning. But it's all using the same storytelling framework, and I think that's why it kind of feels slow and sluggish at sometimes. You know, everybody's gone to the rapture, same thing. But Devotion, it breaks that in a way that I think, and I think that's the kind of like the biggest strength of this game, is that you get this story, and you, but you also feel like you're not about to lose your mind with how bored you are. It's like, am I the one who's like not artistic enough to understand the appeal of Gone Home? Like, you know, I kept thinking about that kind of thing when I'm playing through walking simulators. I'm like, am I not sophisticated enough, or is this just boring? But Devotion is like, it's engaging. It tells a story, yeah. But it's totally broken and difficult to tell what's going on. But I think that stuff, that's a huge achievement to me. And I think like I was processing that as I was playing the game, but now that I think about it a little bit more, that's like what I think was really dope about this game.
I was like hooked on it. Like I started it and I had like intensive like breaking it up into like two nights or whatever, because it's like 3 hours. And then I just like sat there and just played through the whole thing. Like I feel like it's like a mixture of like being very compelling narratively, but also like visually, like there's just like so many sequences that are just like, I just didn't know what to expect, that were like sometimes horrifying or sometimes just like even beautiful. And there's just like so much going on. It's just like a very like visually, not in like the graphical sense, but like in terms of sequences, I guess, how they're structured, that I just found like so beautiful and so like compelling. Like even like I remember there's one instance, like one jump scare that like really got me. There's only a few jump scares in the game, but there's like a part where I had like done everything I think I had to in like this rendering of the apartment, or this version of it. I was about to leave and I heard like something in like the hallway, and I was like, oh no. And I like went out to the hallway, and then of course there was just like a very scary thing waiting for me. And it's just like, but it was just like after this whole sequence of just like this whole apartment changed after I did a thing, and there's just so many parts that are just constantly, it just like never lets you get comfortable. I think that's like really what it is. It's like, this may be the same space you're like walking through time and time again, but it's never the same, and there's always something weird or something creepy or some weird twist on it that will like surprise you and also like illuminate on like what you're learning about this family.
Right. And a lot of that stuff, even though it is scary, is like beautiful at the same time, or like visually arresting. Also, yeah. At the end of this game, it has maybe one of the most harrowing sequences of any game.
I know what like you're talking ever. About. It's like, I think I messaged you both about it. Well, because Kyle hadn't played it yet, so I was like being vague about it. But there's just like,
I feel like I gotta wait. I'm still gonna, I think I might play it tonight. So
we won't.
I was like, I legit recoiled. You know, it was just like, there's a scene at the end here. Whew, buddy, it just like, it really got it's like, this is like, oh, but it's good at that. It's good at like being actually horrifying, but also like, you know, sweet and like touching and also sad, and it's just like, it just does everything so well, you know.
I really hope that we're not just talking about this game and nobody's ever gonna get to play it, because it really is one of the best ones that I've played of this type. Like, it's better than Edith Finch, it's better than Gone Home. I'm sorry to compare all these games, but it's, you know, they're telling a story. There's no like guns in it. It's from a first person perspective. So insofar as it has those similarities to those games, that's why I'm comparing them. But this is it's like the best one to me. And I think this is going to be like one of my top games of this sort for a very long time. And I think it's going to be influential to a lot of like future first person games. And I wonder like how did they come out with this game so quick? Wasn't Detention like 2 years ago? And they come out with a freaking first person game.
Yeah, Detention was literally like this time 2 years ago. It's like very crazy.
It's nuts. And this thing is good.
And it's a totally different style. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's like amazing.
There's a lot of like stuff in this game. Like there's a lot of objects and a lot of art and a lot of, I would look at stuff and I'm like,
Josh, the game developer over here.
No, but you know what I'm saying? Like there's a lot of assets. There's just so many things they had to make for this damn game. And I think, you know, that's easier because they have it in a very closed off space, this apartment. But I'm just so impressed by this damn thing. And it goes like so many places that you don't really expect. But yeah, pick this thing up. Hopefully it's on sale again soon. But if you have, you know, any means of accessing it, ask your friends if you hop on their computer, if they got it. Come over to my house. I'll let you on the old Steam if you're a Bad End subscriber at the $5 tier.
Level.
No, man. Friends of the show, $5 tier. Get in here. Why not?
Get in the house.
Come in my house.
Another like tight thing about this game though is that like it's like by a Taiwanese developer. It's like a weird indie thing that like broke into like mainstream like American cultural like vernacular for game stuff. Like that's super cool. That I think there's some article and I was looking for it earlier, but I can't remember who wrote it. But I think it was this like this Taiwanese woman that was like writing about this game and like all these like small parts of it that were like stood out to her as like somebody who shared like kind of the ethnic group in which the game was made. And it's like it's cool that that thing can exist that feels like in part it's like not for American culture. It's like it's clearly a thing that is for a different group of people that can like can have like cross-cultural appeal. But the idea that it's like, oh, there's like this is not a game made for like, you know, waspy audiences. That it can people can like that if they like horror, they like, you know, walking simulator type games. But the idea that there can be a successful thing like this that can exist and like have the sort of it can like do it seems like it did relatively well outside of its like criticism for this like meme thing, but in general be able to be a game that kind of like almost like transcends its circumstances and like it goes further than just the place it was made. And it's super cool to see games kind of like spanning those boundaries, because another version of this, right, is that it comes out and like no one cares and it disappears on like the other side of the pond. But the fact that it came over, it's had this huge story. I think that part is super cool, that it's like we're seeing a lot of new games by like newer developers, and like they like are like real games. Like there's no caveats attached to them. It's like, no, this is a thing you should play. So that's super cool.
You don't see this happen all the time. And Kyle, you're right. Like this does have like a very distinct cultural angle to it that like we don't typically see. Like this like apartment in Taiwan is like such a living space, you know, like just the way the food in the kitchen, like the vegetables that you see, the program that plays on the television, the music that you hear over the radio, the jobs of like the mom and dad being like a screenwriter and an actress / singer, like all that stuff is like just stuff you don't really see in games, at least not ones that we get to play that often here in the US. So that's like another big draw of this game for sure.
Also the music is really good.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The music's like both like the like idol music from like what the mom sang and like some of the other music that appears, like the music's like really good.
Yeah. We're sorry to everyone who can't readily play this right now.
Hopefully it comes back soon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, somehow it's got to come back somehow.
They said they didn't say it was like gone forever. They're basically doing like another QA pass to make sure there's no other unintended art in it, basically. And also just like, I guess there were some bugs, but I didn't encounter any technical bugs. So I don't, that seemed weird. Like they said that some people were having it crash and I didn't experience that at all. It ran fine on my old ass PC. So I don't know, but I guess, you know, bugs are very annoying. So yeah, they said they're doing that. But yeah, I really hope it comes back up because it's like an excellent game. It's definitely my favorite game of the year so far. Which is, I mean, I know it's only March, but you know, it's definitely, but definitely is like, it shot to the top of my list. And I imagine it will stay there like Detention did 2 years ago. So
I will say the one other crazy thing about this game that's like kind of, it's like related to the controversy and less about the gameplay, but specifically like before the game was actually like removed from Steam, it was getting review bombed by, I think, people who were like sympathetic to the cause it was like ridiculing, and it was like unclear and it was like unclear if the people that were review bombing it were like legit players or it was basically like Chinese sponsored review bombers that were kind of trying to tank the game on Steam, which is like fucking insane because the implication is basically that Steam is enough of a global platform that like these kind of like cultural wars and like political wars are playing out on their platform. And like, what kind of position does that put Valve in as like a company? Because like, if they give, like, should they like kind of, you know, bow down to like larger nation states about the idea of removing a game? Do they like get rid of reviews that are bad? It's the whole idea of like kind of what a platform is really challenged under these circumstances, because like technically Valve is like an American company. So like, does the game actually have like asylum in America in some weird way if it's like hosted on their servers? Or like, I don't know who actually pulled the game from Steam, if it was the publisher or it was Valve or whoever else. And it's like, there's a kind of, it's like all kinds of like crazy, like techno-political ethics wrapped up pre the game being removed about like the way, how do you handle a situation like this as a, like a stakeholder in a platform where this game is like probably getting its most of its sales, because recognizing that if you take it down, like that's just as much of a political statement as if you keep it up. So no one really talked about that. It kind of like came up and when it was happening before the game was pulled, people were like, what should we do? There's always getting so these negative reviews for this great game. And then it got pulled. And so that conversation kind of went away. But again, I think you see this where like, you find like consumers now kind of using the strategy of review bombing or something to basically signal like, you know, discontent for like things that they don't agree with ideologically. So you'll get review bombs. Like recently the Captain Marvel thing happened where like stupid men were review bombing the movie because Brie Larson made some comment about wanting more diverse games journalists or movie journalists or something.
I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
But so it was just like, it's weird, like this whole, the way that political action kind of like morphs, you know, positive or negative political action morphs to kind of fit the platforms that someone's trying to make a statement on. So like on Steam, if you don't agree with someone's position, you can just like tank their Steam review, which then kind of has network effects about that actually lowering their revenue. So it's a crazy, crazy situation with this game. And I think we'll see more stuff like it in the future.
Well, review bombing is, yeah, I mean, I don't know, like review bombing is like, I don't know, it's been a thing like across like the world for a like hot minute of just like, if someone's unhappy about something, they will review bomb it. And I find it really dumb. I feel like Valve needs to acknowledge it, and it's basically not ever acknowledged it, and it's such a prominent problem. And now it's ridiculous. And now we're seeing games literally being removed off Steam in part because of discontent, which is really just probably like a vocal minority being mad about something. But of course, vocal minorities win when they're mad about something, as proven.
Yeah.
I just think it's crazy that like basically the store page for this like niche indie horror title became the like playground of like techno political movements between China and America. Like it was focused on this page for a second, and that's just fucking insane.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Damn, Josh.
I'm just thinking about like how like, what if Anita Sarkeesian like made a game, you know, like That shit would probably...
That would not... She would be watching that on something that did not have a review section like Epic Game Store.
It's a battleground. Yeah, just pure madness. And like, this is how people essentially, like, you know, there's the whole vote with your dollar thing. You don't even have to really do that anymore. You can like play the game, return it, and then review it and just screw up someone's freaking revenue on that platform. Like just mess someone up. And I think that's like screwed up that you can kind of act on that. It's like, why not voice your discontent in some other way? Why can't we like go about this in a way that's like a tad more constructive, a tad less like destructive? And like people always complain about like politics affecting video games, blah, blah, blah. But like when you are literally using your politics to destroy a game's reputation on the store that on which it's being sold, like that is bringing politics to video games, and people do that shit all the time. Like,
yeah.
But you know, hypocrisy doesn't really register, so it's all good. Keep on doing what you're doing, folks. You know, give that game like bad reviews because it talked about like something that you don't agree with or whatever. Not speaking about Devotion specifically, but just in general about the way people behave with stuff like this. Like, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of shit at play here, but what else have you, Katie? You played some other games. I've just been Apexing.
I don't want to just like monologue for a minute because I monologued a lot earlier. But
we could wrap it.
Yeah, we could wrap it.
We haven't had a little quickie in a while.
We haven't had a quickie in a while.
Yeah, I'm down to wrap it. Because I've been playing Ape Out and Trials Rising, but we can reserve those for future episodes. If
I really want to play Ape Out before we talk about it.
I mean, Trials is Trials. Trials is
Trials. Trials is
Trials. What else do you guys say about
Trials? Yeah, there's really honestly not much to say about it. It's back to basics. It's the levels are fun. The world map sucks. That's like my one downside. Is the world map's it's like makes it really hard to navigate, and that's pretty annoying. But
wait, what's like the give me the stack of like Trials games ranked. Also, can you name more than three Trials games?
Trials HD, Trials Fusion, Trials Rising.
I knew Rising.
Trials International.
Trials Blood Dragon, Rise of the Blood Dragon. Is a blood dragon.
Trials USA, Trials
OJ? Vegas, Trials Casino.
Ooh, Trials Exotica.
Oh, my favorite.
So the kick with Trials Rising is it's like an international tour. You're going all across the world. You're gonna be on the Great Wall of China. You're on Alcatraz.
Hell yeah!
You're just going around the world and just crashing into shit, and it's all really funny.
Trials of Hell.
I fucking love Trials.
Trials is great.
So good.
It's really good.
That core formula never gets old.
It's honestly like I feel like Fusion complicated a bit. You know, they tried to do tricks and shit. Rising's like no. Like you're doing flips, but nothing more. No weird moped
shit. Does anybody
shit.
Feel like Trials is like kind of scary?
What?
No.
It
just feels like
Trials is fun. It's just pure fun.
Feels like empty. Like the emptiness of Trials.
Oh yeah, there is
like
no
eerie to me.
There's no personality there. There's like weird emotes and stuff. They're trying to make it more multiplayer. I guess that's another thing. Is like so the multiplayer stuff's not that great. Except for there's a new tandem bike, which is really funny.
What?
You control the same bike at once.
That's
it's
sick.
A nightmare. And you can play the whole game tandem if you want, which is I don't recommend it.
Do you guys remember like the fucking nuts like ARG Trials thing?
Oh yeah.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
So like in Trials, so on the note of Trials being creepy, I think it was in Trials Rising, there was like some nuts ARG. Where, like, if you got to a certain part of a level, there was, like, an item that, like, if you entered a certain way, you could get under the level. And, like, the fucking thing culminated in, like, people in real life, like, meeting at a mountain in California. And it was, like,
what?
And there was, like, some buried.
In Trials.
Yeah, like, it was, like, Amazing Race, like, national treasure type
sick.
Shit buried in one of the Trials games. But I want to Trials.
But it's gonna be this new one.
Did you all ever
Trials Evolution?
Yeah, Trials Rising is a new one.
Did you guys ever play like Flash games that were basically like Trials?
Oh yeah, I mean, Trials is 100% a Flash.
Yeah,
game.
It was a Flash game, and now it's a.
That's
game
what's
game.
What's creepy about it. I think to me is like it's a Flash game's soullessness.
With, I see that.
Like, it's like it's actual. Just, it should just be like a blue background.
The music is like.
In 3D.
The music is so devoid of personality, it's kind of impressive.
It's like Rocket League dubstep.
It's like not, oh, it's just like, it's like they don't think about the music when they are putting together this licensed soundtrack. It's like all horrible, but yeah. It's all like inoffensively horrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wait, why is Trials not on Xbox Game Pass? I feel like that is a shoe-in.
That's true. I mean, there's probably one Trials game on it, unless no.
Listen, I was like really hype on Game Pass last year, and I feel like I'm not getting anything new.
Yeah, what's Crackdown 3.
Don't care. is that even out?
Yeah, it came out earlier this month. After a decade in development. Yeah,
Crackdown 3 is out?
Crackdown 3.
I
guess
no
like I'm invested in the space. So I
thought that was still like being
Nah,
Crackdown
3 is out. Oh, it's not good, apparently. I'm not playing it, so
Holy
I don't.
Holy shit, really. Okay. I just it just reminds
Josh
me
Josh
like,
downloaded Crackdown 3 this moment.
It just
listeners.
Reminds me of like
also Disneyland Adventures.
Trials
yeah,
just
that's
reminds
a great
me of like
game.
These soulless worlds of like 90s video games that were just like they didn't have the tools to like imbue everything in the world with humanity. So everything is just like this empty husk that's just like kind of scary. You know what I'm saying? Like
It's a world that needs stick people fighting in it.
Like Lego Island, like that game, fucking scary, dude. Because it was like the first open world game I ever played, but nothing did anything, and it was just
like soulless. Yeah,
that's why all those children games are so damn creepy because nothing, like they made all this stuff, but none of it does anything. And there's just something weird about going through this weird world full of like what is essentially statues, you know.
This is actually kind of my theory about why the Elder Scrolls Morrowind is like the best Elder Scrolls game is because like it came like basically right at this time where like it still had that sparseness of an old game, but like had just enough to make it feel like an open world. So like inside basically Morrowind exists in this weird space between like having the sort of enough density to actually make you build a believable world and not beating you over the head with like so many like pre-scripted systems. So the effect of it is that you feel like you're kind of projecting yourself into the landscape around you, and like you're prescribed because like everything feels so detailed, you're giving everything so much more meaning versus like in like Oblivion or Skyrim, like everything has this kind of pre-subscribed meaning and there's all these big set pieces, whereas Morrowind is like super like downbeat. But like it makes all the moments rise so much more, and like you start giving everything the meaning that it feels like it's grappling with. So it's like, yeah, I totally hear what you're saying, where there was this kind of like time when you couldn't just do everything. And that's why I think you're seeing it now, right? Like a lot of these kind of like PS1-ish
low poly
era games are coming out. Yeah. Like Paratopic is a good example. Like that new horror game about like the broken mirror or something. Anodyne 2. Like stuff like that is kind of like getting at this idea of like, oh, like what does it actually mean to like go back to that sparseness where you can actually do a lot without having to have like a lot of stuff and have all the density.
Dark Souls does some of that too, which is interesting, which is like it has these characters in the world that don't do anything, that you'll walk up to a character and they like say a voice line, but you look at their face and it's just a statue. It's just a fucking, they don't say a word, the mouth doesn't move, the face doesn't, is totally expressionless, they might as well just be a statue. And it's like it's that feeling of like really eerie, like there's something wrong with this, like this is messed up, this is haunted. Trials gives me that vibe, you know. That's what I'm saying. It's like the most unexpected type of game to give you that vibe, but it does. Because
I mean, I feel like there's something like gross about, like, it's just like, you know, you fling your character off.
It is kind of, yeah, it's Grogu, right?
Yeah, it's gross. Like,
it's like absurdist, like weird ragdoll.
They really lean into the humor in this one, which I like, because I feel like those games have always been funny and maybe haven't leaned into the humor as much as it could have. But this one's like, some of the ending sequences are really funny. There's one where you like fly onto a rocket and then you can just like watch this very long sequence of like this rocket flying into the sun while your character's ragdolling off it. It's really dumb. And then, yeah, it's really good.
When is there going to be a Trials movie?
Good question.
Like it's inevitable.
It's inevitable?
At this point, it just feels like...
What?
Part of it feels like a shoe-in for like a weird movie series.
I don't think so. That would be funny, though. I would appreciate it if it happened.
God. You know what game does an interesting thing with this like inhuman, human stuff about video games is like Echo.
God of War.
That game Echo? Remember that game?
That's becoming a movie.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that game was cool because, like, your main character...
Oh, Echo, E-C-H-O.
The main character is, like, speaks, and it is, like, very expressive and is, like, really well acted. But the world is filled with these, like, dead model characters.
God, Echo's creepy as hell.
And that's... It makes it creepy because, like, you have those two kind of, like, side-by-side mirror images of each other of, like, this, like, very empty video gamey presences that are meant to exist in the world that way, and they're meant to give off that vibe versus like the main character who's like very human and expressive, but like it plays with that. But yeah.
Yeah, Echo's whole creepy
cool 3D world. Cool 3D world does that stuff.
Cool 3D world,
you know, that those in
Brian
these like faces that are making expressions but are just clearly virtual, and it's really uncanny and messed up.
That's my shit right there.
That's something that I've always felt about Trials, and I'm glad I got that. We got the chance to talk about that, though.
Got the reaction.
Because I've always had that like unsettled, weird feeling when playing Trials, and I never really put it into words, but here we are.
Does Trials have online multiplayer this time around?
Yeah. Sorry. I was like thinking about it. But yeah, that's like the big focus this time is there's multiplayer.
We got to make a hit list of Badin live stream games. I feel like Trials Rising... great option. Apex Legends, another great option. That's two games. That's at least two streams.
That's it. That's all we got. That's all we have. It's all we're streaming.
I also fucking crush at Trials, so I am excited.
I'm like really bad. It was funny, like just reviewing that game and seeing all my fellow reviewer friends just kicking my ass on all the review scores. Like every time I'd log on, I'd be like, "This person beat your score," and I'm like, yeah, of course they did, because I fucking suck at Trials. But I play it anyway.
Oh my god, I love Trials.
It's just like, I recommend Trials like Rising, pure fun. Now available.
Pure fun.
I heard the Switch version is bad, so don't play that one, because I heard it has some performance issues. But on PS4, it's totally fine, pretty much. There's some stuttering, but I've heard they patched it out. I don't know if that's totally true, actually.
There's nothing wrong with performance issues.
No, I don't know. I've heard the Switch...
sometimes. And
yeah, I mean, it didn't hinder my enjoyment of it, but I heard the Switch version has some like significant issues.
People, regardless of for who they are, even if they do have them.
I guess so. I mean, I guess some people played like Doom on Switch and liked it, and that game has some performance issues.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a reality, people. And, you know, you get older, stuff doesn't work the way you expect it to. It's just the reality of life, and you should just accept people life, regardless of performance issues.
All right, check it out. We're going to win this podcast. We're going to announce our game of the month. So as a reminder, if you go to patreon.com/badend, you, my dear friend, can join our Patreon at the $5 a month tier called Bad End Fan. And you will get to hear us discuss our first game of the month, which I am excited to be the person to announce, is Faith 2. Not Faith 1. This is Faith 2. This is a like hella independent, weird horror video game on itch.io. You can buy it for $1. And it looks insane. I actually don't know what to expect. I saw it on Twitter. It's got this crazy, like, rotoscoped pixel art thing going on, which looks really compelling and also scary. I thought it'd be good for us to do a horror game because we tried to do Devotion and didn't do Devotion, and this one was kind of popping off around the same time.
Devotion.
So, Devoche. You can't do Devoche.
We love Devoche. Faith, but...
Faith 2. You can also play Faith 1 for extra credit. We will be keeping extra track credit. Of points.
Faith No More.
I'm going to look it up. It's called Faith Chapter 2 on itch.io. It's by Airdorf. There's also a demo, but you should just buy it. We should all buy this game for this person, and we'll talk about it.
First name Airdorf?
I think first name Air, last name Dorf. Mm.
Is this my guess? You don't think it's last name first, Dorf,
last
Dorf
name
Air?
Forced. You know last name Drake, first name
Forf. Last name ever, first name
Yeah, Davis. I was about first to say. You stole it.
All right, so I say maybe play Faith 1 if you want. Faith 1 is there a price on Faith 1? Faith 1 is free if you want it to be. Whoa. We should probably give them money.
Yeah.
Faith 2 is at least $1. So we'll play that. We'll talk about it. We'll put out a podcast where we talk about it, and then I think we'll release it publicly maybe like a few weeks afterwards. But if you want to be part of the discourse as it happens,
the hot discourse.
Feel free to play it. Join the Discord. There's also a private channel for Game Club members, so you guys can talk about there before we actually record the podcast.
Added benefit of joining our Discord is I have Humble Monthly, and I get a lot of games that I already own, so I give my codes.
Oh, Josh is definitely dropping codes.
Oh, yeah, you were dropping codes the other
Someone
day.
Got a Cultist Simulator code in there, and there's like 10 people, so you don't, like, if you want a code, if you want some codes, you're gonna get some codes.
You got some codes?
And it's gonna be
I got so many codes. I got a lot of codes just like sitting
honestly
around.
I should do Humble Monthly, but I also like review games, so it's probably not good use
I've
for
probably
me.
I probably have like 10 different codes or instances of like Braid, you know, like I probably have
there was like some of those games
out, like,
that
candy.
Were in all the bundles.
Yeah,
it's like you got Braid, you got Eats,
Serious Sam,
got a lot of Eats codes,
Serious Sam,
Serious
I have
Sam
like
codes.
30
Goat
Serious
Simulator
Sam codes.
Probably.
Goats was like there was like a few like whatever's in the first Humble Bundle, like everybody's got like
N plus I have
games.
Like 30 codes
N plus
I have like 30 codes for Dust Force DX. I have like 35 codes for Dust and Elysian Tail.
Oh yeah,
so
I definitely have
I'm
some Dust Elysian Tail
like
for everything
cakes, folks.
Yeah.
Just dropping them.
I've got
I think you just joined the Discord and asked Josh for a random code. We'll make a little
he'll,
bot.
Just probably,
look
yeah.
at the past list of Humble Monthlies and just be like, hey, Josh, do you have Metal Gear Solid 5? I do, by the way. If you want that, subscribe.
I might get
hop
that.
In.
I'm like,
I'll give
$5
you the code
bad
for
end.
Shit. Kyle's not getting it because this is just for Bad End subscribers. But,
whoa.
Yeah. Metal Gear Solid 5. It could be yours.
Shazam.
Yeah.
I don't know why I said Shazam.
I don't have any.
All right, folks.
Sorry.
With that, we are Bad End Podcast. Thank you so much for listening to our show. Please, if you like our show, tell all your friends, rate us and review us on iTunes, subscribe to our Patreon. Again, that's patreon.com/badend, one word, no dash between, no capital, just Bad End, one word. We are on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. Tweet at us, retweet our stuff, make us feel good. We are on Gmail at badendpod@gmail.com.
We really got to unify this brand.
You have any
yeah, we have,
we're,
it's, we're
it.
All over Look, the place.
We're everywhere.
It's fine. It's fine. We got two different handles. It's fine. Just so get in our Discord, chill out with us. We're great people. We're lots of fun.
We're also we're active. We're like we hang out
yeah,
there.
We hang out
yeah.
there. We're not too cool for the Discord. We chill.
I hang out in the Discord.
Today,
I
Kyle
post.
And I talked
yeah.
about a Korean film called Burning for like 20 minutes, and
yeah,
no
it was
one
just
else
like you
anything.
Two going
I
back
know.
And forth. I was like, why are you guys
talking
doing
about
this?
Films?
We get some film talk in there, which we don't really yeah. do so much in the podcast, but it's some great insight. On the film,
yeah, we got a channel
Burning.
For film, for music, for I know I just watched Leaving Neverland,
books.
Sad fucking documentary. I don't, I mean, I recommend it, but also you gotta be in the mood for it. You gotta be like,
when are you ever gonna be in
to,
the mood for that?
You know,
when are you ever like, I'm trying to watch this movie. Right?
I'm trying to watch
a
like 4-hour documentary about sexual
events.
Abuse.
Yeah.
No one ever says that, but I mean, we watched it. Oh, also, we watched the Oprah talk after because we were like, Oh, Oprah did an interview with them. We should watch that. So it's watch that after watching a 4-hour documentary.
Dude, I do that shit with like the Criterion stuff where I like watch like a Criterion movie.
You gotta go
movie,
on the special features.
Like, yeah, I'm like, I'm gonna watch this hour interview with Claire Denis now.
We do that
like,
too.
I just gotta do it.
You just gotta do
you
it.
You watch it on Criterion.
You're in the
you
mood.
You can't pass that stuff.
You gotta,
can't
not. The special features are like why you get Criterion.
Yeah,
that
that's
and the
reason
nice artwork.
You, do it.
You know, the nice artwork is like maybe third on the list, but the special features and
oh,
probably
dude,
good
I gotta,
commentary.
I'd show you right now. I bought the when I didn't buy it. I got the. The Criterion Designs art book.
Ooh, that sounds like a nice art book.
It's so I'm looking at it right now.
It's beautiful.
Like,
film head.
I might post a picture of it
real
on
film head
the
here.
Discord as a preview. So, again, game of the month, Faith 2 by Airdorf. Looks like a creepy one, y'all. So,
buckle up if you're a scared pants, you know?
Yeah.
And if you have a seatbelt.
Mm-hmm.
All right, folks, this is Bad End Podcast. We will see you in a couple weeks. Later.